All right, this is 1 hour on stage. Welcome, welcome. This is Tim David, and I am here with our next guest expert. This is guest expert interview number 7, and I'll be interviewing a gentleman by the name of David Horsager. Now, Dave and I met several years ago. I was in attendance, and he was speaking, and we connected for a reason, and that's because Dave also is very skilled at the art of magic, and he incorporated that into his presentation in order to motivate, inspire, educate, and really just illustrate a lot of the points that he was making during the presentation. But Dave is a certified speaking professional. This is the second CSP we've been able to interview, which is really, really nice. And he's been really delivering presentations all over the place. That's here on the site. He's been to 4 continents with audiences ranging from Fortune 500 executives to the armed forces and professional sports teams. I like what this says. It says he built his reputation on 2 things: being easy to work with and delivering engaging, high energy speeches every time. Dave, welcome to the call today.
Hey, thanks so much. Where your last name goes, my first name picks up.
I know, it's like a perfect segue right there. In fact, speaking of segues, basically that last line there, being easy to work with and delivering engaging, high-energy speeches every time, sort of leads me into our topic today. Now, our topic has to do, Dave, with really 2 things, and 2 things only. And that has to do with the strategies and the tactics that effective speakers use. Now, just so our audience is clear and just so you're clear and I'm clear, the difference between strategies and tactics is very, very simple. Strategies is really sort of the overarching mindset, if you will, the beliefs, the ideas, and then the tactics would be the way and the method that you implement those things. So as an example, a strategy might be treat your customers like gold. That might be a strategy that we have as speakers. And then the method or the tactics to implementing that would be something like sending thank you notes or maybe sending a gift or having special promotions or privileges for our customers or customer appreciation events or whatever it is. But those tactics, again, are going to be in alignment with our strategy. So a lot of times people get really, really excited about tactics, Dave, and all they want to hear about is the methods and the tactics and the ins and outs and the nuts and bolts and that sort of stuff. But for me, I get really excited about strategy, because if you take someone else's tactics and try to implement them, they may or may not be successful because maybe your strategies are different. Maybe your overall plan is different. Maybe your personality is different. Whatever it is, I think that the tactics without the strategy is really in vain. And I think that we as speakers very often, and I know a lot of speakers who fall into this rut of just implementing tactic after tactic after tactic without having an overarching strategy. And it really lends to spinning your wheels. It lends to, not really any forward momentum. So we want to change that. We want to make sure that we are strategic in our approach. So I just want to ask you, Stephen Covey talks about beginning with the end in mind, Dave, and I just want to talk to you a little bit about what your definition of success in the speaking business is. I'm going to have you answer this question in 2 ways. First, I'm going to have you think back. I'm going to travel backwards in time here for a moment. I'm going to have you think back to when you started out in the speaking business, and if someone were to ask you, what is success in the speaking business? And then we'll zip back to present day and say, okay, now, after knowing what you know and having the experiences that you have, what is your current picture of success in the speaking business?
Well, I mean, I can answer that a couple different ways. At one point, it was making an impact and paying the bills, you know. When you go back a ways, when we started, you know, our story goes back to when I was directing a youth and family organization in Arkansas and living on a golf course and vehicles part of it and everything else. And Lisa and I moved back to Minnesota. We started largely on the illusion front, even though a message was always a big part of it. I was a speaker before, an illusionist, but then I was mentored by one of the best illusion teachers in the world and ended up using that very significantly in our big Don't Be Deceived presentations. But to do that, we really, entrepreneur at heart, really, so I ended up You know, we moved into the basement of an older lady's home, not a single window in the basement, no bathroom, no kitchen. It had black mold on the walls. We lived there for 2 years to you know, throw everything we had into this before we had our four kids. And we had a real heart to make an impact, but we also needed to make an income. So there was a high motivator there just to, you know, pay the bills and whatever. And within a couple of years, we did 54 events in Japan. We're in Latvia and Spain and Paris and Branson and whatever. But, and I think it's interesting, no matter where your heartbeat is on this, as far as in impact, the entrepreneur needs to think of both impact and income, because I've mentored and worked with a lot of people, and they have a really great mission, but they think, oh, it'll just all work out. And you got to have an income too. You got to have an economic driver. It's got to pay off so that you can, you know, cover these things, and that's okay and that's good. So, you know, nowadays my company, Horse Tiger Leadership, is all. We're about is around trust. Kind of funny coming from illusion, kind of deceiving or tricking, and now I'm one of the noted experts on how trust affects organizations. But now our mission is to develop trusted leaders and organizations. So when we're about, you know, all my research is on how trust affects an organization and how trust affects a leader, how people pay more for the trusted brand, follow the trusted leader, buy from the trusted salesperson. It's all truth, but they once they saw how it affected the bottom line, they got really interested in it. And, you know, I've got the book, international book launch happening here October 9th with The Trust Edge, and that's been fun to see. And a lot of my tactics, even for running a business like this, come out in that book. But basically becoming most trusted, that's why I have the view that you saw there. Be easy to work with and deliver every time, even though now I get paid a whole lot more and, you know, been picked up in corporate jets and picked up in limos and whatever it is, I want to come across not as a prima donna. I want to come across as a, you know, really make it easy to work with and deliver every time. And that's kept me very booked, has been one of the you know, strategies really for keeping me booked. So, but what do I, you know, now I really am, I'm motivated by the impact, and I'm motivated by the reach, and I'm motivated by, you know, it's fun to give people jobs now. You know, now I have a team, and it's fun to, I've got 8 interns and a couple full-time staff, 2 or 3 full-time staff beyond me, depending on, and that's fun too. So I guess there's a few kind of parts to that motivation question, but maybe looking at the history is a little help too.
Yeah, no, I think that you absolutely touched on a lot of important topics and takeaways. One of them being just like you said, the motivators and starting out from humble beginnings and realizing that, you know, we all sort of need, you know, what I call basically we need a pain. We need a pain because without a pain, there's really no change happening in our lives. And I think that the only way change happens is when the pain of staying the same outweighs the pain of making the change.
And that's in business and everything else. I mean, look, I lost 50 pounds last year in about 6 months. I'd known I was overweight, but beyond what I wanted to be for a long time. Finally, in front of my whole team and the company next to me, I shook hands with the guy and said, if I'm not their GM, general manager, and I said, if I'm not my high school weight by May 1st, I'll give you $2,500. Well, there's kind of a creating your own pain a little bit.
Right.
But also, you know, I had moved from, you know, when I was doing my research, 14 hours a day, that was hard. When I was having, when we had 4 kids in 5 years, that was hard timing. Finally, it was time to get back and be healthy off the stage and on the stage. I talk about trust. I better live it. But you can create your own pain. And, of course, there's plenty of, you know, pain to be had without that. But I think largely you're right. I mean, the other way to inspire is just with a really big, clear, compelling vision. Because, you know, you can move forward with a real you can be motivated by a very clear, compelling vision forward. But pain is almost always the start. I agree.
Yeah, we interviewed a guy by the name of Rob Berkeley who hosts vision days for people and helps people to really identify their vision and make that crystal clear. And I agree with you 100% that is a crucial, crucial step. And you mentioned another thing in that sort of introduction there, mentioning your book launch. It's got to be really exciting. This is a book being put out by the Free Press. It's a division of Simon & Schuster. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
We're very fortunate. It's a amazing story on its own, how that became such a significant, bidding war in New York. It almost never happens anymore. And after we, in essence, self-published it, then it got picked up by a small publisher, and it did fine on its own, but it really didn't have the international reach or even national reach, really. Now it'll be in, the airports and bookstores all over, and it's got a big, big, big push behind it. So if anybody's in the Minnesota area, there's going to be several gold medalist athletes and premier business leaders and celebrities downtown Barnes & Noble on the 9th, 4 to 8. That'd be fun to have you. If not, boy, you can grab it on Amazon or wherever, and I'd love to if you email us at thetrustedge.com or davidhorsteiger.com or thetrustedge.com, we'll give you a bunch of free stuff if you grab the book that opening week.
Yeah, Free Press, they put out some major titles. Seven Habits, I believe. Brendan Burchard's bestseller that recently came out, The Charge. Ken Blanchard's, book.
Yep.
And on and on and on. But, so this is going to be, I think, a really, really big step, and I can't wait to see the Trust Edge in the airports, because I spent a lot of time there. You mentioned your website as well. I do want to give everyone the link. It's davidhorsteiger.com, and that's spelled HORSAGER, and that's David, not Dave. And right at the top, this is really interesting, right at the very top left, this is the prime real estate, as we talked about in one of our other modules. Join the Trust Edge movement. Dave, we've been talking about movement marketing and what it takes and what it means to be the leader of a movement as a speaker. Could you tell us a little bit about how you really are perceived as the leader of the Trust Edge movement? And is that something that was intentional for you? Is this a happy accident? Tell us a little bit about your thinking behind the Trust Edge movement.
Well, I'll tell you, it almost goes back first to something else, I believe, and that is, there's people in this business that want to be seen as experts, or they want to have certain things, and yet they don't have those things, like they're not seen as leader of movement or whatever it is. They want to just say it. It's floofy. It's faux. It's kind of like, I'm the best sales teacher in the world, so I'm just going to tell everybody I'm the best sales teacher in the world. And I just got to go back and say, for me, in my story, it was very valuable to become one of the top experts in the world. And some people, everybody wants to, in our culture, get things done so fast and become gazillionaires so fast and all these things. For me, look, I did all my graduate work on trust, then I wrote on it, did research on it, and now years, it's been several years later almost, it's paying off in big dividends. Other people want to take a lot faster path. Now, I've been speaking. It's been supporting my family. It's been a six-figure revenue since, for a long time, since the late 90s. But as far as really stepping up, I just got to don't underestimate the value of becoming an expert at something. This has been a huge, significant piece of mine. So I think for joining or for kind of creating any movement, there either has to be you either have to be a real expert, for it to kind of take off in some way, where you are one of the most researched, or you did have the most experience in it, or you were the CEO of whatever, or it's got to be a project that is 100% about something else. So, you could join the orphan movement, and because that's totally about orphanages and you're helping orphans, you don't so much have to be the expert, because you see how that's totally other focused. It's not so. Anyway, for me, it's because of the research and the expertise, and the other piece is there is an intentional part there, and that is to try to take people and transform people and organizations beyond a one-click moment. And so we did intentionally brand the movement too. I've been very busy, as a speaker, obviously, and seeing that, so you kind of seen as the expert there, wrote the book, The Trusted, that already had you know, some certainly credibility and everything there. Do training, do strategic planning under the Trust Edge. We have a coaching process, you know, 360 assessments and all that. So now the movement piece is just trying to bring people through that are already excited about it, already into it, into some other levels. And so we're going to have a, you know, the Trust Edge book club. We have those videos created. We're going to have an online piece, you know, for the Trust Edge, you know, where people can't all necessarily meet in person. We're doing some work on something called the Trust Table, where, you know, top leaders meet around the world four different times or three different times as part of a really top level group of top leaders. So there's different parts of that movement, but yes, we've been intentional about trying to take it beyond just the book or a speech and really help people live it out and implement it and understand it even more over time, you know.
Exactly. And what I see the most successful speakers doing is using their speeches almost as just a way to bring awareness to what they're doing. You know, some speakers look at their business and say, oh, the speaking is the business. It is, you know, it's the end-all be-all. When in reality, you know, what you've just outlined and what you've just illustrated is you have an entire suite of services that you offer, you know, companies and individuals on this one, first of all, extremely niche topic. As Dave said, you become the expert and therefore the you know, widely known as the expert. I have a lot of questions for you about that process, by the way, in a little bit, just choosing that topic and, you know, all that other stuff. But essentially, again, what you're doing is you're using your speaking, yes, as an income stream, but it's also bringing awareness to, you know, all these other things that you're doing. And
you mentioned Brandon. Look at Brandon gives his books away for free to upsell another piece. So, I mean, you got a lot of different ways of doing it. Let me just say this. I'm around a lot of people that are successful at getting information out there, and there are a lot of different ways to do it. And so, and there's a lot of different ways to do it successfully, and that's the fun of it, is you can be creative and do something that fits for you. I will say this. I want to give a little teaching time. You know, so I used to be an adjunct professor of organizational leadership. So I think relevant to your group, back to the strategy piece, depending on how young or even older they are in the whole business. One is you really got to build your business. I think you have to have three expertise. So if I can just jump into something just quick, and then I think this would be framing it well for you. I think you need to have in this business, you need to be an expert on the platform. So when I was doing illusions, I learned from one of the best. As a speaker, I have speaking coaches. You need to be – today, we are compared to TED videos and the best speakers in the world. You know, 20 years ago, you did not have to be as good. But today, there's such access to information. We have to be exceptional. So your number one marketing is to become better on the platform. Number two, you have to be an expert in your field, in your area of expertise. So if it's in sales, if it's in leadership, if it's just in entertainment, you know, magic or something, if it's in whatever it's in, you need to really be an expert. So one, as an expert speaker, you know, relayer of information, but two, as an expert in a certain topic area. The other area you need to be an expert is as an entrepreneur, as a business person. And this is to where you come in here, Tim, with what you're doing is, you know, there's a lot of people that were great that I know that are great on the platform, and they're great, they have some great ideas, but they just don't understand the piece of being a great entrepreneur and being a great business person, running it as a business, not a little hobby, and that is critical to being, you know, being successful. So to the end about, let's just take the entrepreneur one, because I think that's some of what you teach on, two ways people need to think. One, impact. If it doesn't make an – two eyes. I call it the two eyes of entrepreneurship. If you don't make an impact over time, you won't keep the motivation going. But two, if you don't think in terms of income, what will that cost? What will that be worth? What will that – you know, what will that create later? It might be a real fun idea to say – For a lot of magicians will start out and they think, oh, they got to have back of the room product. Well, let me have a little, you know, how to do a magic trick DVD, and let me have a little T-shirt, and let me have this. And it's like I learned quickly, those are not necessarily worth it. There are other things that are more worth it product-wise. A book is really valuable in several different levels, but some of those little chintzy products may or may not be, depending on your crowd as far as income. So you have that side. let's look at one other side of the entrepreneurship piece that I think people need to think about, depending on where your people are at. One is, this would be, you know, kind of be partially from Jim Collins at A Good to Great, but partially a little bit under the way I think about it. And that is, one, you have to have three legs to this stool. One is you got to have a real passion for it or you won't last. Number two, you have to have expertise in it. And number three, you have to have an economic driver. So it kind of goes with my three eyes, but people that are really passionate about something, and there's no economic driver. Okay, I'm so passionate about underwater basket weaving. Oh, that's just so fun. Well, there isn't an economic driver. There's not a market for it. Okay, you gotta know or have a market for it. It's okay to think about that. Number two, you have to be one of the best. You got or be able to become one of the best at it. You've got to have talent at it. And let me tell you, a lot of talent can be created. A lot of the talented are those that work the hardest. So I remember a friend of mine saying, "Oh, do you really think you're as good as Ken Davis?" When I knew I wasn't then, and he knew I wasn't then. But I took comedy classes, I took illusion classes, I took speaking classes, I worked at it, and I had some, I think, innate ability too, God-given ability. So, but those three, you really need to meld those together, it seems, to be successful long haul.
I love everything that you said there, Dave, and, you know, you've certainly affirmed a lot of the, you know, maxims, if you will, of 1 hour on stage, and it's always good to see someone, you know, who's achieved a certain level of success, sort of go back and reaffirm some of the fundamentals. One of the things you talked about is really building your expertise, building your skill sets. And if I can just bring Brendon Burchard back into the conversation real quick. And guys, if you don't know Brendon Burchard, you know, he's someone who's had some pretty big success in a relatively short period of time, and you know, got a lot of available information that explains how he did it. But one of the things he does is he pours into himself continuously. I think he reads a book a week, and he has read, you know, 52 books a year every year since his car accident. If you don't know the story, he explains that pretty much everywhere. So mm-hmm. That's a pretty strong commitment. And again, if we expect people to value information, we need to value it mm-hmm. ourselves. And ultimately, as speakers, mm-hmm. that's what we're doing. We're expecting others to value our information. So, and that's a great thing, because the more you read, the more possibilities there are. And Dave, this again brings me back to trust, because there were so many possibilities for you. And mm-hmm. there were so many options for you as far as topics mm-hmm. go. You dedicated sure. really a long time and a lot of energy mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. elbow grease, if you will, and talk about the hard work, into trust. What was it that mm-hmm. that made you choose that topic? And as part of this, were there other trust experts in the field already? And how did that affect sort of your decision-making process?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, let me say there's pros and cons of a lot of different ways of niching. You know, a lot of people in the speaking world would say, you got to have a niche, and you have to have such a strong niche. You know, you do better. A lot of people do much better if they decide they're just going to speak, for instance, in the real estate. They got to go deep instead of go wide. Let me just say that is true, that's valuable just in real estate. Or I know some people really successful just in the dental realm, and everybody, all the dentists and all the dental, you know, conferences know this couple that speaks there. Trust isn't like that, of course. Trust is, look, I've spoken to the Department of Homeland Security, Wells Fargo, and John Deere. I've spoken in, you know, my top four groups last year were very diverse. Financial sector, agriculture sector, healthcare sector, and government sector. So not to mention throw in a few professional sports teams and whatever. So it's a very unique, broad topic, you can imagine. So I had to go, where was I from? You remember back when I was doing a lot of illusions and I was speaking to a lot of youth conferences, which, by the way, is great training ground for becoming excellent on the platform, because if you can keep a bunch of junior hires or senior hires' attention when you're surrounded in a auditorium or surrounded in a gymnasium, worse yet, and keep them going, boy, you're going to be ready for corporate, A. You know. But number two, For me, 2003, Lisa and I are at a conference in Tucson, Arizona, and I was looking at issues and I was thinking about branding, and I was thinking, you know, the problem they're looking at in that company is not the real problem. I think it's a trust problem. And at that point, it was just intuitive. But then I thought about it more and more, started researching it a little bit. Then I did my graduate work. I got my master's degree in organizational leadership, did my final paper, dissertation, whatever, and all my research the whole way through on trust. And then it really took just talons into my flesh. I mean, it really took root in me because I came to see everything as a trust issue. And then I did two basic sides of the research. One, how does trust – everybody thinks trust is just a soft idea, but I think it touches the bottom line. It's a hard skill, actually. I think it affects the bottom line, and I can prove it out very quickly now in analogies, but the research proved that out. Most people think trust is just a soft skill in the corporate world or whatever. It's not. If you think it is, ask Tiger Woods. One breach of trust, and he lost 27 breaches of trust, lost millions in weeks, hundreds of millions by now. Penn State's going to cost them $1 billion because one person's breach of trust over the next decade. A credit score is a trust score. The more you're trusted by a lender, the less you pay. So that was part of it. The other part was how do I actually build trust? Is it what everybody thinks or is it different? And on one level, these eight uniquenesses came to the top. Eight, I call them pillars now, but these eight ways or pillars that need to be there to really have what we call the trust edge. And some of them were surprising. Some of them were, of course, like, oh, of course, honesty or whatever it is. Character, of course. But, you know, I might trust Tim David with my kids because of his character, but I won't trust him to give me a root canal because of his competency at that specifically. So you learn that there was more to it. It was deeper. And we also started to see that all those that had the greatest impact and greatest income over time had all eight of the pillars. So there's two sides of this. One was just this awakening that it's not just a soft skill. Two, here's how you do it. Here's a framework, an eight-pillar framework for it. And those two things were very significant. And so that just kind of was organic as it built. But part of it was I love this topic. It resonates with me to the core of my belief, this whole topic. So I didn't do it just from an angle of saying, what's the newest idea? What's the newest topic people should be speaking on? What's most relevant? I obviously didn't pick a good niche of saying sales or, you know, sales in real estate or something because, look, nobody's looking for a trust speaker. I mean, almost never is anybody looking for a trust speaker. They're looking for a sales speaker, a leadership speaker, a customer service speaker, an innovation expert. They're not looking for a trust speaker. But somehow, when you become still very niched in a topic of expertise, they can get, oh, trust in innovation or trust in leadership. I want that, you know, there. Trust in sales. And, you know, it didn't hurt me at all that our culture and our world saw a real need for trust at this given time, so it really helped me a lot. I'm all over the place to answer your question, but I'll tell you the other side to it is, yes, I did see a few people who had written and thought about trust some, but frankly, there was not much when I started my research out there at all, and there'd been a lot of research on what destroys trust, but not a lot on what builds it, so it was very fresh. Now, I had it was a bummer of a day for me, at least I thought at that time, when Covey's son, also named Stephen Covey, came out with a book right when I finished my research called The Speed of Trust. And so here's a big name in Covey, and a lot of people at the time, speaking of a trust challenge, they thought it was Stephen Covey himself, not his son. So a lot of people even went to those Speed of Trust conferences thinking they were going to hear the dad when there was the son. So they kind of branded that way, and, you know, it was a ghostwriter who wrote it and everything else. So there was some challenges for them too. But anyway, you can't go against that hardly, and I couldn't come out. And bottom line, I agree with his book. I agree with his tenets. I agree with everything. And so I said, oh, is my stuff still going to be relevant or valuable when someone that big a name? And I showed it to agents and publishers and whatnot, and they said, oh, this is the same in your thoughts and your ideas, but it's different in how it's laid out. It's more actionable. Then the former CEO of a huge, I think it was former CEO of US Bank, did reviews of both and talked about how both of these books were so important, but he actually had told me in person how much he liked mine because it was so actionable. So you had to even carve a niche against those that are out there, even if they're very good. And frankly, let me just say, Covey's Junior's book, Covey M.R., Stephen M.R., wrote a great book. It's great ideas, and I resonate with it. But mine is different, and it was almost good for me, other PR experts have said, because he almost opened up the genre or the area for it, and yet I could come in, and I have some things that are really going for me. People might say from the platform as far as engaging and all that, and they might say also in how the book's written. And if you look at the books even, they're both 350-plus page books. They come out of research, but mine is very different in look and feel and in how it's got red tabs and colors and a ribbon and everything compared to his that looks like a lot of other books, black on white, whatever. So.
Right.
So you have to deal with that as you go. There's other experts on it. I found now there's a lot of people that have done some research and become somewhat experts on trust. But, in another way, I pioneered it, and I have certainly grateful to have a certain kind of, following that likes what I do in that area. And so, it's great that way. I'll say one thing about niching and coming up with trust. One is nowadays I wouldn't change it at all because I don't look at a niche just to find a niche. I need to look at who I am and what I'm about and trust really, not that I'm, perfect in any way, but this is something I really get passionate about, I really resonate with, and so it exudes from me. There's plenty of people who have said, oh, they heard someone else on trust, but you're so genuine about it. And I think there is a true genuineness about what I bring to it because I really believe in it and I'm passionate about it and all that. So I bring what I bring. The other thing that I've actually enjoyed about it is, as much as people say niche in one audience, I didn't do that, and it has taken off in a lot of different segments, and I enjoy that I can tie trust to insurance, to agriculture, to finances, to pro sports teams, and talk about the trust edge in teamwork or the trust edge in business or the trust edge in families even, or even the Salvation Army. The Salvation Army leadership hires me as much as anyone, and I can, tie it in there. So that's been a blessing for me, actually, to be broad but still find a niche so that you are known for something, because that is critical.
Yeah, you touched on a lot there, Dave, and I really, really appreciate you talking about sort of the integrity behind it, because like you said, it's not a niche just for the sake of having a niche. It's something that you resonate with, and I'm glad you said that because I was going to draw that out if you didn't, because I do know that about you. And
there's a lot of people, let me say, that just try to find, well, what's the hottest thing today, or what thing could I make some money on, what's really cool, what's interesting. And I'll tell you, it might work for a little while, but people can tell. There's even people that have come into the trust field seeing how successful some people have been, like, about this, and it just isn't them. Not that they're not trusted, but it's not, they don't have the it's just not to the core. They're, even if they believe in trust, they're really a much more change experts or innovation or something different that maybe isn't as hot anymore, and it is not worth going into something because people will find you out. And over time, you're gonna become known. For my life, even though I want to write 20 more books, it'll all come under trust. It'll all marry well with trust. It'll all, resonate with this umbrella. And it's worth coming from your core, over the long term.
And you had this epiphany back in 2003, or this moment when you realized,
yep,
hey, this is a trust issue. And
yeah.
So you've dedicated that time since to this particular topic. So for those listening, can you imagine dedicating, 9-10 years of your life to something that is just not of interest to you or not of significant, mm-hmm, meaning, or something that doesn't resonate with you? I mean, it would just be, I mean, this is, we're talking about designing your life here, not someone mm-hmm else's life. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think it's really, really important.
There's other things I'm passionate about. I mean, I'm passionate about helping entrepreneurs like you. I'm passionate about some other things, but this is my core of what I'm passionate about. And so for you or someone else, it might be, oh, they're passionate about really helping entrepreneurs, and they, or strategic planning or whatever it is. And they, that exudes out of them, and they just love that, and they come around that, and they're passionate about that, and they do a lot in that area, and that's worth, it's just worth really doing the most in the area that you're, you know, if you're really core about it, you know. So
great. Yeah, I think we've absolutely talked about a lot of the strategies, a lot of the maxims, a lot of the ideals and the beliefs that go into and a mindset that go into having and running a successful speaking business and starting a successful movement, if you will. And let's go back to the early days and let's maybe transition, because we only got a short time left here, maybe transition a little bit into just some simple applicable tactics. I know that you're big on making things applicable and making things that people can take and use the first thing, you know, Monday morning when they get back to work or what have you. So
two words that we think of. Can I systemize this, and can I do it consistently? We believe that the power is not in the big thing, and I'm telling you, and you've seen this, Tim. So many people, they'll go hear Brendon Burchard and they'll say, "Oh, I got to do that." Then they'll go hear this person, "I got to do that." Then I got to do that. And the truth is, there's a lot of good things to a lot of different people. I knew for a long time, for instance, a successful mentor of mine did a newsletter every week. And I thought, oh, should I do that? And I thought, if I have to do that, I will hate this business. And so I did not do a newsletter. I would hate it if I had over me all the time having to write an article every week. That wouldn't be me. It wouldn't be fun. So you got to decide, what is it, not that everybody else is doing. Fine, look at successful people. Look at what people are doing. But what will you do as a system consistently? And that's where we have done, you know, some things well. We've created systems and we've created consistency to certain things. We think, you know, that's what we're known for. We don't do everything, but we do some things consistently, and somehow that keeps the bookings coming. And so when you think about back, if I go way back for a time, back when I didn't have so many bookings or whatever, I would always consistently make just five calls a day. Five calls of people I thought might be interested in having me speak. People say, "Oh, what about 100 calls a day?" Fine, but you know what? I wouldn't do that consistently. Sometimes I did more, sometimes less. Then I started having a system for how I filed these things, and it was paper back then. And now we use eSalesTrack, which I love their tagline. It's so easy, you'll actually use it. So some people have Infusionsoft, some people have Salesforce, or all these things. And I've spent way too much money on so many things that we found, you know, a little system that is a little less expensive, and it actually works for us. So we really put our things in eSalesTrack. We put basically the 39 touches we have with a person once they book us. So if they book us, let's say, December 1st, for December 1st, it goes back and it shoots an email to Ryan and says, 3 weeks beforehand, it says, "Did you book the flight for this?" 2 weeks beforehand, it emails me and it says, "Did you have the pre-call with this person?" 2 days after, it says, "Did you send the thank you gift?" Or did you send did you call for the follow-up call? Did you do this? So those things, to systemize those. So now when we're so busy and I have, you know, sometimes 10 to 20 events a month, I have a day coming up next week where I'm one night flying to Detroit. The next morning I'll speak in Detroit. From there, then I'll get on a plane right away, fly to Minneapolis, speak in Minneapolis the same day, get on a late night flight to Portland, and get up in the next morning and speak in Portland. Well, if I didn't have systems, number one, I don't want to be that busy, and we are super busy right now because I have four kids and I don't want to be gone too much, but we're at a time these 6 months getting the book out and everything else, we're going to do some of that. But if I didn't have systems, I wouldn't do what I talk about, and that is, you know, really treat my customers, my clients well, and I couldn't do it. It would be overwhelmed. I wouldn't remember something. I would forget something. And so really the consistency in gaining bookings, consistency in how you deal with bookings, just think of marketing. One big marketing idea, it can be interesting. Oh, I can do this big stunt. I can do that fun thing, but it has no lasting impact. But if you take marketing and do it something consistently, little thing, you know, we say it here all the time, little things done consistently make the biggest impact. If you do a little thing like making one call a day of the right person, it's amazing to me how many people will sit and work all day and avoid doing the most important thing that would push their business forward. Do it, you know, they'll avoid it at all costs. They won't make the call they could do in the first 5 minutes, or they'll make an excuse. Oh, it's Monday, they're probably not in. Oh, it's Friday, they're probably out. Oh, it's lunchtime, they're probably on break right now, they're probably whatever. And it's like, just to stick with a few things that you'll do consistently. I heard Jim Collins recently. He said, if you have more than three priorities, you don't have any. And Buffett said, my key to success, most people can't do it. They can't say no. It's the ability to say no. Of every 100 opportunities, I say no at least 99 times. It's this ability to get really clear on the most important things and very consistent about them. One more, I was in the room and actually had the opportunity to be at Larry King's home in Beverly Hills just a couple months ago, 20 leaders or so. One of the guys is the publisher of Success Magazine, and he was saying, you know, most businesses, especially entrepreneurial businesses, people think they have a thousand things to do. And it usually comes down to six that are actually have any really relevant, valuable impact. And if they would just focus on those three to six things every day, they would be brilliantly successful. But they tried this and they focus on that, and it gets to the point of, maybe I should make some T-shirts for the back room, or maybe I should make a new little book. And it's fine to have multiple streams, but in those cases, those streams, are they really that much streams of income compared to what you could have and impact you could have? So we've really learned to focus on the three to six most important things. That's calling, that's follow-up, that's doing a good job on the platform, you know, really being consistent with those few things and doing those absolutely exceptionally and trying to systemize that piece. I can give you more ideas, but that gives you a little framework.
Yeah, I love the concept. I love, again, the strategy of, first of all, that quote from Jim Collins, I believe you said it was from, if you have more than three priorities, then you don't have any. I think it's brilliant. And, you know, it brings us back to focus. It brings us back to really, dedicating yourself and doing the thing consistently. I love that word as well, consistently, that yields results. So could you give us maybe an example? I know early on you said you did a lot of outreach over the phone. What are some of the other things that you do consistently? Do you have more of a broad marketing approach? It sounds like what you do is focus on a few things that work.
Yeah, well, we nowadays, some of the things we're consistent at are, one is we still believe the phone is a good method. We like connecting to people that way. When people are hot, when they're really interested. So I try to call one person a day between things that they gave me their card at the last event or they connected. And there's no hotter time than soon after an event, because if you get a year away or a month away or a few days away, sometimes they don't remember. But right then they're, I had this thing would like to have you come to my company or whatever. So we still do that. A lot of the consistency now, because I am traveling so much, I sit on several boards and all these kind of things, is my team. So Reed, for instance, in eSales Track, he sets up these campaigns in different ways. We don't like to bother people. We only want to give them good things. So we have some campaigns, though, for people. They get touched a certain number of times. I could have him get on a call with you and say the things he does, because basically what he does leads to all the events we need nowadays, or just me doing events. So he does that. We make calls. I'll say one thing we're really good at, and that's follow-up. After the event, they've had a great time. They loved it. We always thank them and always call and say, hey, anything else to follow up with this? Anything else you would like to go deeper? So that opens up for our future programs, the coaching and some of the training and deeper things. Or anybody else, any other organization you're a part of or might want us to touch base with that you think would be a fit? And we don't do it in this forceful way, but we just ask. And you know, when they're gushing, they're just like, oh, yeah, I'm actually a part of – I'm, you know, president of this company maybe, or VP of sales, but, oh, yeah, I'm also on the Association of American Sales Trainers. And we have the annual conference in Cabo this year, and I actually sit on the committee. Or they're like, oh, yeah, we have another company. John Deere, I mean, it's amazing. We did this thing. They flew me around in their John Deere jet all over the place. And then, ended up doing John Deere Financial and ended up doing this other thing. And now this guy sits on an outside committee, and we've done several coaching processes for their general managers. And he just sat on some committee where he gave my name to their competitors, to Case IH and Caterpillar and all these others, because he said, we just love what you've done, and we think it would, let it help other people too. So it's kind of interesting how – but because we follow up, we just remind them a little bit. Otherwise, people are thinking of other things, and they're on to the next thing. We have a way then with a client to call back in a year later, connect back a year later. We do some things consistently now that I don't have to do it as far as newsletter. So we do a newsletter every month, but by and large, I don't create it. They take an article from my book or something I've been saying or an interview I just had, and so that does stay consistently. I'll give you one other thing about follow-up, because it's really important, as you know, it's really good to those that already love you or saw you, to keep them you kind of create the tribe. After programs, at the very end, we don't want to be hard sell. We really can't. We want to serve the client, but we do say, hey, if you do want a free follow up pack or a free set of follow up videos, they'll get emailed to you every day for the next every Monday for the next 10 weeks, and you can also get the free productivity pack that shows you how to have 10 or less emails in your inbox and a completely clear desk every day. And a few other things. Say something quick like that. People want that because they're overwhelmed by email. Their desk is messy. And, wow, free video thing, that whatever. So we created this free follow-up program that anybody that gives us their card, they get a video email to their desk every week for 10 weeks, one on each of the 8 pillars and opening and closing. They also get the free productivity tips, we call them. Well, almost everybody, many people leave their card. Then we've got their email, and then late they remember us, they connect with us, we build a relationship, and they're on the newsletter list now that gets the Trust Edge brief. And so all of a sudden we get then from those hundreds of people, thousands of people a month, we get more things. Or they think of, when someone thinks of a speaker, they remember you and connect with you and, call back. So that consistent piece of follow-up is another, I guess, specific tactic.
Brilliant. Yeah, and one of the things, if someone is listening and thinking, this is hard, calling people is hard, well, let's rewind and go back to the idea of being passionate and resonating with your topic and just absolutely believing it. I mean, it's going to be so much easier to reach out there and touch base with people and encourage them to take an action that you firmly believe is going to be in their best interest and help them out. So once again, I really appreciate your time, Dave. Part of the reason we do this is to just get insight into people who are doing this and living this. And you've really provided that. You've really given us a peek into, again, some of these overarching strategies and some tactics as well that we can really get our hands on and start using. And there's nothing glitzy or glamorous. There's nothing super sexy about it. It's simply hard work, diligence, persistence, those 7 things that Covey talks about of highly effective people. And it's applying those foundational, fundamental basics towards a specific vision and a specific purpose. So once again, Dave, congratulations on the book. That's very, very exciting. And like I said, I really look forward to seeing it in airports nationwide, bookstores.
Thank you.
Well,
I'll let you know this. If you would like to, if anybody today would like the free, our regular free pack, or get the free video so you see what we've done and see how easy it is. You can even copy the idea. Then just email Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at davidhorsager.com, and you can get the free – they'll give you the free follow-up, free video pack, and free everything else. You'll get the Trust Edge brief. If you get the book, if you get that on Amazon and email the receipt or Barnes & Noble or anything in the next few weeks, you can even pre-order it right now. Then you'll get another level of free stuff, and we don't banter or try to get you to purchase anything else, or we'll upsell you on other things. That's just a free deal too. So either one of those, if you go to Amazon and get the Trust Edge, email that receipt, and he'll give you a gateway to get the free stuff there. But if you just want the free stuff from listening to me, the first package, the videos and the productivity tips, just email Ryan at David Horsager, and so happy to give that to your group, and it can be very valuable. And the clarity chapter is very valuable on starting your business, or really zeroing in on your and moving a business forward, by the way. Especially, I come from doing a speaking business, so that can be valuable. But it's been a privilege to be on, a privilege to reconnect with you, Tim. I know you're doing some great things around the world, and just a treat to be with your audience.
Likewise, Dave, and I would strongly recommend that everyone take up your offer for those freebies. I think that's a great way to model, and also to take a look at Dave's site and get on that list to get the Trust Brief and just take a look at what he's doing. And again, it's out there. He's got it on the web, and we might as well you know, take a look and you know, start again, sort of putting in positive models, I guess you could say, into our brain, into our mindset, into our thinking, so that we can begin to model and emulate success as well. So, Dave, again, I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure and honor, and best of luck with the book, and congratulations again.
Thank you so much. Bye.